This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Welcome to Newsweek's Foreign Service. I'm Josh Lowe.
And I'm Miren Gedda.
And each week, we look at the big stories from the US and what they mean for the rest of the world.
So this week, we're looking at President-elect Donald Trump. That's probably no surprise to our regular listeners because he's been dominating this podcast for the past few weeks and probably will continue to do so for the next few weeks, if not months. But instead of looking at Donald Trump within the US, we're looking at his relationship with China. And Donald Trump has got himself into a spot of bother recently. He's been cozying up to Taiwan, and that's seriously irritated China. In a bit, we'll talk about that. But I think it's worth looking, before we do, at Trump's policies and views towards China. Because throughout the presidential race, as I'm sure Josh will remember, he was very, very hardline on China.
Our country's in deep trouble. We don't know what we're doing when it comes to devaluations and all of these countries all over the world, especially China. They're the best ever at it. What they're doing to us is a very, very sad thing. So we have to do that. We have to renegotiate our trade deals. And Lester, they're taking our jobs, they're giving incentives, they're doing things that, frankly, we don't do.
So that was said during the first presidential debate, which I think was my favorite debate because it was the one where Trump kept sniffing a lot. But he basically said to the audience that China had stolen U.S. jobs because U.S. factories had relocated to China. And he was also angry that China had devalued its currency in order to keep its goods more competitive. And what he said during the presidential debate was very much backed up by the policies he has on his website. So he said that if he became president, as he now is, that he would get his Treasury Secretary to label China a currency manipulator. He said that he would possibly go to the WTO, that's the World Trade Organization, and bring cases against China. And finally, he said that in order to remedy trade disputes with Beijing, he would go so far as to put tariffs on Chinese goods. So a very, very hardline stance. And actually, fair play to Donald. He seems to have followed through with it.
So what we're talking about today is Trump's views on Taiwan, because he's said that he doesn't want to be bound by the US's one China policy on Taiwan. And he's taken a call from the president of Taiwan, which is the first time a US president-elect or president has done so since 1979. Now, the longstanding US policy on this, the one since 79, the one China policy, is a bit of a fudge, really, because Taiwan is not recognized by China. China sees it as illegitimate. Its government is, in fact, descended from the defeated government in the Chinese Civil War. China wants to bring it back under control of the overall state. And that's a very kind of emotional thing for China. That's seen as going to be something of total national fulfillment. So it feels very strongly about this. Now, the US hasn't completely disavowed Taiwan, but since 1979, it no longer recognizes the Taiwanese government as the legitimate government. It recognizes the mainland government. And in 1979, it also pulled a lot of US forces out of Taiwan and allowed a defense treaty to expire. So now we have this situation where you've got a bit of a fudge. The US has always tried to keep China on side, and now Trump is saying, well, I don't actually need to be bothered by that. I'm going to talk to Taiwan, and I'm going to trade with Taiwan, I'm going to work with Taiwan if I want to.
And that attitude has, unsurprisingly, irritated Beijing. So what China has said is that it's seriously concerned about Trump's stance. And they have said that they will not be cooperating with the US if it does abandon the traditional one China policy.
The Chinese side has noted the relevant reports and we are seriously concerned about it. The one China policy is the bedrock of Sino-US relations. If it's compromised or disrupted, the sound and steady growth of China-US relations, as well as bilateral cooperation in major fields, would be out of the question.
So that was a spokesperson from China's Ministry of Foreign Affairs. And obviously he's being diplomatic there. He's not going to stand up and say, you know, we vehemently disagree with Trump. This is outrageous. But, and this is interesting, Chinese newspapers, such as the state-sanctioned Global Times, have been pretty hard line on how they've spoken about Trump. So the Global Times wrote that he is as ignorant as a child in terms of foreign policy. They also addressed Trump and said to him, pride goes before a fall. So it's quite dramatic stuff. It's not to say that Beijing has told them to write this, but in the past, Global Times has been a mouthpiece for the government. So reading between the lines, yeah, it seems like Beijing isn't thrilled about what the president-elect has been saying.
And so we wanted to get a bit of a sense of what the feeling is like over in China, and also on what the kind of future prospects for any sort of renegotiation of the trading relationship there might be. So first off, we called up the man behind Newsweek's latest cover story, Enter the Donald.
I'm Bill Powell. I'm the Asia editor and China bureau chief for Newsweek based in Shanghai.
I suppose the question that we all have is, what are people in China saying about Donald Trump's election? You know, first of all, when he became president-elect, how did people take that? Were they celebrating or commiserating?
Yeah, no, definitely not celebrating. I think they were shocked more than anything else. I mean, shocked, I think, even more than the American people were. A fair number of Chinese, particularly urban, the more urban educated Chinese who are sort of internationally aware, followed the election pretty closely. Frankly, people just didn't sort of take the Trump phenomenon seriously here until really after the election, when they woke up or during the day on Wednesday here, when they discovered he had actually been elected. They sort of viewed him as this bombastic businessman slash reality TV star and didn't really think seriously about the possibility that he could become president until in fact he won the election.
And do you think there's any sort of understanding there of why Trump might use China as an issue in the way that he has, of why he might stoke up antagonism there? Do you think they're surprised to see so much antagonism from the US, or do you think there's an understanding of that?
I think it's mixed. I think there will be significant resentment if Donald singles out China as sort of a whipping boy going forward. I think during the campaign, people sort of tended to dismiss his rhetoric as just, you know, kind of the things politicians say from a guy who wasn't likely to win anyway. Now, of course, the elites and the policymakers in particular are having to take this very seriously and have gone from trying to figure out, I mean, they scrambled in the immediate aftermath of the election to just, you know, figure out who this guy is, who is advising him on China matters, should they take the campaign rhetoric seriously or not. And I think you sort of had this reaction sort of symbolized by the immediate reaction to the news that he had taken the phone call from Tsai Ing-wen, the Taiwanese president. The immediate reaction from China's foreign ministry was to sort of criticize Taiwan, and they called it a petty little trick, and sort of left it at that on the Saturday and Sunday afterwards. But then, as it emerged that there perhaps had been more calculation involved on the Trump side in receiving the call, you've seen the anger and the rhetoric get stepped up.
And Bill, you've written this big cover story for us. And for listeners who haven't seen the cover, you should check it out because it's really amazing. It's some sort of cartoon of a Chinese dragon punching Trump. So it's really cool. And the story is great. And for people who haven't read it, Bill, can you just tell us a little bit about what the article says? What are the key points in it?
There is sort of a working assumption that if the U.S. and China get involved in a quote unquote trade war, that it would be disastrous, not only for both countries, but for the global economy. People make analogies to 1929 and the Smoot-Hawley tariff and all of that. And there is certainly a concern and scenarios that are out there in which an all-out trade war between the two countries would be disastrous. However, from the U.S. perspective, it is true that the U.S. runs massive trade deficits, which are a drag on growth. China, by far, runs the largest trade surplus bilaterally with the U.S. And historically, it has tended to be the surplus countries, and China runs chronic trade surpluses and current account surpluses. Those countries tend to be more vulnerable to protectionist action or to trade measures which are designed to reduce a surplus country's surplus. The question is whether the Trump team is going to go at this with a blunderbuss or a stiletto.
Just lastly, Bill, looking at this from where we are now, from your position in China, how optimistic, I suppose, do you feel about how Trump's China policy is going to turn out, both for the US and for China and for the global economy more widely?
Not optimistic at all. Donald was very clear during the campaign that trade and renegotiating bad trade deals is at the top of his agenda. And China, along with Mexico, were the two most often cited countries as being problems. So the people who elected Donald, particularly the industrial working class in the Midwest and states like Pennsylvania and Ohio, are expecting him to act on that rhetoric. And I think, as we've seen during the transition thus far, Donald is not backing down on that.
So that's the view from Inside China, and I'd like to thank Bill for joining us. Now let's talk about things a little bit more generally. Let's broaden it out. Let's look at what the US is saying and thinking as well. And we've got a great guest joining us here in the studio.
My name is Kerry Brown. I'm the Professor of Chinese Studies and the Director of the Lao China Institute at King's College London and an Associate Fellow at Chatham House, London.
And so we're here really talking about, as our listeners heard in the intro, Trump's comments recently on Taiwan. And this obviously comes in the context of months and months and months of comments about China from Trump. In fact, he said the word just once or twice on the campaign trail, I think.
Let's say China.
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 So just a minor issue in the campaign. And in that context, what kind of effect is Trump having more broadly, do we think, on relations between the two?
Yes. The odd thing about the way that Trump says China is it's like the way that you get Chinese people in China learning English say it, with a sort of very heavy accent on the ch. So it's a rather sort of interesting thing that he says it in such an aggressive way, almost like English isn't his first language. So, you know, his attitude towards China in the presidential campaign was that it was economically hawkish. And I mean, that's because China is a protected currency. Yeah, I mean, it's not a convertible currency. So it means that China is able to not set its currency at market rates. And that means that it can enjoy quite good access to foreign markets by selling its goods cheaper. Now, there were reasons in the past why that was a good thing, because people could buy cheap goods from Walmart and other places. But now, of course, with lower employment and lower growth, developed markets like America in particular and Europe are not happy about this, and they want China to change its currency policy. So there's all sorts of things that Trump talked about, you know, in the economic realm, but he didn't really talk about security. The only thing he says and has said and will probably continue to say about security is it's expensive, and therefore that he expects partners in the Asian region to pay more for that. And China, he expects to pay, you know, for the kinds of access to the American market that it has. So he's really using a very kind of business-like mentality about a pretty complicated issue.
And we can go into the security aspects of it a bit later. But to stick with the economy, it's the economy, stupid. I mean, one thing that people are saying is that if Trump continues to make overtures to Taiwan, that China could retaliate. And one way that it could retaliate is by hurting the US economically, particularly because, you know, Trump's also talked about the idea of imposing tariffs on China. If that happens, if he makes good on that promise, could we see a trade war between China and the US, or is that over-dramatizing it?
We could see a trade war, and it's one that almost certainly America will lose. And so I don't think, you know, the whole point about engaging in these fierce fights with each other is that you've got to have the conviction that at the end of the day you can take the pain and win. And I don't think America really can, because China has much more in the end to lose from this, so it will fight harder. I mean, that's just a sort of basic principle of any kind of negotiation. And so I think the only reasonable response from both sides is an acknowledgement that any economic fight would be mutually assured destruction. I mean, whoever ends up winning, they're going to end up winning with a battlefield that's going to be very, very bloody economically, of course. I'm talking economically, not militaristically. You say economy stupid, but you can't separate the economy from security in most issues. And with China and America, at the bottom line is that Trump is right in as much as he says that China has benefited from a global, norms-based, benign trading system massively to China's favor. And something needs to be done to rebalance that. So as long as Trump is trying to get a better deal from China into the global system, contributing more, being more open, having more access for American companies and other companies, then I think that is a rational policy. But mixing that up with security issues is somewhat high risk.
Well, because you say that there are some rational things that could be done to possibly rebalance the relationship a little bit. I mean, are there some things Trump could do that would both fit his slightly combative rhetoric against China economically, but also be sensible and might get the US a better deal, might get US workers a better deal?
Well, he doesn't support the Trans-Pacific Partnership, so that would have been one way of giving China pressure. I can't really see how America can give China more pressure without working in partnership with others. It can try and stop Chinese access to the American market. And again, there'll be costs for that because then Americans will have to buy goods sourced elsewhere and they might be more expensive. And he can also try and stop American investment, Chinese investment or American investment into China. But they won't be straightforward. There'll always be costs and benefits. You know, there's never a sort of easy trade-off. So I imagine what he's going to do is try and use an issue like Taiwan, because it's the only area where you really can hurt China, and China cares about it. So he might try and use that as a bargaining piece. But as Chinese media over the last couple of days has said, there isn't an appetite to bargain over this. This is not something that they're going to bargain over. So As I said earlier, it's somewhat high risk what he's doing.
I think so far we've talked about this in quite a negative way, and perhaps it is, but, and I'm not about to sort of take Trump's side, but, you know, are there any positives for America in Trump embracing this more sort of hardline stance towards China? I mean, could it be beneficial? Because we know that China holds quite a lot of the US's debt. I mean, the US and China have always had this very uneasy relationship. Could we see the US now being lifted into a position of strength, or is it all just going to end in a bloody metaphorical battlefield?
I mean, Trump has a point. I think, you know, no one would deny that China has a highly advantageous position in the global economy at the moment, and its protected currency, its very protectionist regulations over access to its market are often greatly to its benefit, and it's time to readjust that. I don't think anyone doubts that. And that's not just an issue for America, that's an issue for Europe. So there's going to be a pretty fierce negotiation with China. But that negotiation is going to be a pretty sophisticated, delicate one. And mixing issues like security issues and other issues into that, well, I'm sure it will happen, but it's going to be pretty hard to control. The bottom line is that China has to open its currency to market rates and has to open its finance and services sector better to foreign companies. And it has to be a contributor more to the global order in terms of finance, in terms of kind of currency flows. It's got to be a more open economy. And that's something I'm sure that China will have to do. It will want to do it incrementally. It's a question of whether it will do it quickly or slowly.
Do you think Trump sort of knows what he's getting into here in some ways? Because one thing that sort of struck me reading about the China-Taiwan relationship, as one example of the things he's talking about, is that it's a pretty emotive issue for China. You know, the one nation policy is not just a matter of cold emotional calculation. It's also about what they believe they are as a nation or should be as a nation. Do you think Trump kind of gets the complexity of this issue? Do you think he is being strategic, is thinking about using it as a wedge or whatever it might be? Or do you think he's just sort of lighting on things that he's heard and kind of throwing them out there and seeing what sticks?
Well, reportedly, he's a president who's never read a book. So I suspect that he is going from...
He's read his own book, presumably, The Art of the Deal.
Yes, I'm sure his ghostwriter has. I mean, I feel, you know, during the election campaign that he showed an instinctive ability to go for people's vulnerabilities. You know, diplomacy is about relationships, and he is now showing the same ability to go for vulnerabilities. The problem is, you know, like the poet W.B. Yeats said, you know, tread softly for you tread on my dreams. So in crashing into this issue things can happen way quicker than anyone can really deal with. And this is a very emotional issue for China. It's an emotional issue for Taiwanese too. And just coming in and, you know, saying we're going to unilaterally sort of change things will get people wound up. And when people get wound up, they aren't easy to control what they do. So I think the other problem is that it doesn't seem that he at the moment has particularly good advisors around him. And it seems from my background, I was a diplomat before I was an academic. And with politicians, you've got to have officials around them that kind of get their trust and work with them. And at the moment, it doesn't seem like he has very trusting relations with anyone. I mean, not even with the intelligence community. So it's really hard to know how he's going to get good advice on this issue, which is a complicated issue and is one which China is willing, has been willing to go to war on in the past, and has a law from 2005, the anti-succession law, which says that if Taiwan declares independence, they will go to war. They're legally obliged to go to war over it. I mean, you know, this doesn't, why negotiate with a partner that doesn't have any space to negotiate with you? It doesn't make sense, even in business.
And we're talking about Trump very much as though he's charged into this hugely emotive issue with his own emotional rhetoric, saying, I'm going to get tough on China, I'm going to bring jobs back to the US. I think it's clear that he's probably not going to be able to follow through on all of those promises. But, and again, I'm not taking Trump's side, although I'm aware how I'm starting to sound in this podcast. Are there any benefits to getting cozy with Taiwan? Can Taiwan in any way benefit the US? Or is it too small of a player, really, to help them?
It's a significant economy. I mean, it's 23 million people per capita GDP, which is high. You know, one of the world's best producers of semiconductors. I mean, it's an important economy. And it's also really important that democracies show solidarity for a democracy which is under threat from a non-democratic entity. So from that point of view, this is a big red line. And America certainly, under the Taiwan Relations Act from 1979, does have a treaty commitment or a treaty-type commitment to looking after the security of Taiwan should it be threatened. For sure, raising this issue and also saying that it is, on the surface, a really kind of illogical policy. Why do we have this place which has its own currency and its own flag and its own military and its own, you know, stock exchange? We don't call it a country. I mean, anywhere else you'd say that was a country. Taiwan is the big exception. So why do we still have that? So I think to raise these issues is valid. I don't think raising them in this way, especially because the Xi Jinping leadership in Beijing are very nationalistic too, is going to mean that you can resolve the fundamental issue, which is the final status of Taiwan.
And another kind of regional issue related to China as well that people talked about during the campaign, have talked about a bit recently, is China's relationship with North Korea. There's a sense that, well, we know that North Korea poses a threat. There's a sense that perhaps American intelligence knows that they're going to pose a greater threat and that China's going to be central to kind of managing that relationship. Trump sort of mentioned this once or twice during the campaign. He said some stuff about China needs to do more to tackle North Korea. But how is all the stuff that we've been talking about going to play into this? And how would the fact that America needs China on its side on that front, how is that going to affect the other stuff that we've been talking about?
So the only treaty alliance that China really has with anyone is with North Korea from, I think, the 1950s. And in 1950, when the People's Republic was established, there was a moment when it could have reunified with Taiwan. You know, it had the ability, it could have invaded there and then. And the moment when it thought about this, the North Koreans under Kim Il-sung declared war, and it had to then pile into that issue. So in a sense, North Korea has always been the spoiler. It's always really been a problem for China. Trump is probably right in saying China is the only one that can deal with North Korea because it's the biggest investor, it's the biggest energy supplier, something like 90% of the energy going there. By way and far the biggest trading partner. So to be honest, if China was to turn off the taps, North Korea would collapse tomorrow probably, but then China doesn't want a kind of Korean peninsula, which is probably under the control of the Americans. You know, I mean, it's very, very worried about this instability. So it sort of tries for the status quo. But North Korea is always plotting its way into, you know, disrupting things. Most American presidents is greeted with a nasty surprise. It did one of its nuclear tests, I think, in 2008 when Obama became president. So I think we can expect North Korea to do something this time. And whether, you know, this is one of the issues, not really Taiwan, but North Korea is really the issue where you get a kind of approach that will it's zero sum. I mean, the North Koreans have nothing to lose, so they are willing to kind of provoke and push. And for someone like Trump, who obviously is very provocable, this could be absolutely incendiary.
And so we're sort of nearing the end of the time here, but just to wrap up, to ask a very simple question. Well, actually quite a complicated question, but it's going to sound simple. Who has the more kind of space here? Who has the stronger hand? Who needs the other more, America or China, as we're heading into these potential renegotiations of that kind of relationship?
So to give you a very classical sort of politician's answer, I mean, I think they both need each other. And it's like this caustic, difficult marriage where neither can leave the other, and yet they're both yelling at each other all the time. So rather than having, you know, Trump sort of trying to up the ante, I think they need a marriage guidance counselor, to be absolutely honest. And it's hard to see at the moment where that kind of counsel will come from. I can't see Russia being particularly interested in helping. Most of the partners will just want to, in fact, have this kind of relationship between America and China as being not great because it suits people. But in fact, the best kind of relationship would be a much more harmonious one. It's hard to say what Trump will do when he actually gets in. He's said a lot that's contradictory, so we assume after a few months he'll realize just how high the stakes are and that this isn't, you know, like a version, this isn't like a kind of episode of The Apprentice. It's really, really worrying. The Chinese sort of mentality, I think, in Beijing is that they want more dominance over their region. They feel that's their right. And they're not going to, I think they're going to see Trump as an opportunity eventually to have a weakened and more isolationist America and one where they can kind of fill in particular spaces that America no longer wants.
Okay, well, I think that's all we've got time for. Kerry, thank you so much for coming on the show. Thank you to everyone who listened. Just a reminder that you can listen to us every week. We're on SoundCloud, iTunes and Acast. Don't forget to subscribe to us and rate us. We would so appreciate that. If you can't wait till next week, you can visit us at newsweek.com or pick up a copy of Newsweek.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50. Luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.